Joining me on the phone today to further discuss these calls for respect and reform is former Australian of the Year, Professor Fiona Stanley. Welcome on The Daily.
Thank you very much, Miles.
Now, for some of our listeners, they may not know exactly what the Uluru Statement is. Can you give us a bit of backgrounding on it and what it's actually calling for?
Yes, I can. And this is a long process. There's been many approaches by the First Nations people in Australia to have a voice. Of course, they did have ATSIC many years ago, which was disbanded in the Howard years. And possibly it would have been better if they'd actually just got rid of the problems and kept ATSIC on, because it did have a very good representation across the nation and tried to influence what happened. But what the Uluru Statement from the Heart is about is really about acknowledging the sovereignty of Aboriginal First Nations, the fact that they have been here for 60,000 years, that there's never been a rejection of that. There's never been an official constitutional acknowledgement of the fact that they've been here. And, of course, this is all about what we should be doing to change the constitution to acknowledge Aboriginal people. But there are three bits, I guess, to the Uluru Statement from the Heart. One is that they want a voice, and they want a voice to have some kind of input into the decisions that are made about the policies and services that are being implemented on them. And we've failed as a nation, actually, to develop good policies in health and education and certainly in justice with the incarceration of so many young Aboriginal people. But so that's the first one. We want a voice. They want some kind of power, because we've got a lot of data and evidence from our research. I've been researching child health and these sorts of issues for nearly 40 years now. We've got a lot of research to show that when Aboriginal populations around the world have that power and actually take some control, Aboriginal controlled services, then the outcomes are much, much better than if they don't have a voice. And so they're better in terms of the services, but they're also better in self-esteem, the mental health and even the suicides of these peoples. The second thing they wanted is to start talks about what they call Makarrata, which is about treaty. And so they want to think about having some kind of treaty relationship with the Australian governments, and that would be across the whole nation. And the third thing is to have a fair and truthful relationship with the people of Australia. So really it's a sort of call for Australians, I guess, to understand what's happened to Aboriginal people over time and to actually walk with them to improve their outcomes. And, you know, I really think it's a terrific statement. I think, of course, it's not everybody supports it. Some First Nations people don't support it, but we're never going to have a complete consensus. And there are many Aboriginal voices as well as there are many non-Aboriginal voices. So,
now, given the Turnbull government rejected these wishes from the Uluru Statement, I suppose it sounds like you want it to be overturned, but are there avenues for that to happen, to try and persuade the government to take a different angle on it? Because yesterday he seemed to embolden his position around not going ahead with the requests from it.
I think that, I'm not a constitutional lawyer and I don't know how these parliamentary committees and advisory groups are set up. And I think it's a real challenge. And obviously, I think it's probably a bit of misinformation that it would become a third group in the parliament, because that's not what, in fact, has been proposed. In fact, the proposal is yet to be really fully developed. And I guess what was so anguishing and really gutting for both First Nations and for people like me was that they didn't even say that we'll talk about it. So yet again, there's another rejection, if you like, from the Australian Parliament, that they don't even want to talk to Aboriginal people about this. So I don't know how we can influence them, Miles, but one of the things we want to do with this statement is to try and influence the Australian Parliament to at least have a conversation and to talk to these Aboriginal First Nations groups. And secondly, we wanted to actually give our support to the First Nations, a non-First Nations voice saying, look, actually, there is a group of people, a large group of people in Australia who are on your side about this issue, about you having a say in what happens to you.
Okay.
I come with a lot of evidence and research to support that. So even if you don't sort of care about Aboriginal people, there's a cost-effective reason for actually giving people a voice in what the policies and practices should be, to stop wasting money
Indeed.
On programs
and so,
that don't work.
I suppose that speaks to the heart of the issue, which is why these reforms are important. It's because it can. There's evidence to support it can save money. Can we talk a little bit about the constitutional reforms, which was the idea of the recognition of around terra nullius, the concept of it at least, and how they wanted to be revisiting that and perhaps correcting the record about how Australia wasn't just some great empty space. It was occupied and lived on for thousands of years. Part of the Turnbull's government reason for rejecting the Uluru Statement was because they were unsure whether or not these reforms would pass public votes, which certain sections would have to have, including a constitutional reform around recognition. Do you think that that is an accurate assumption made about the electorate, or do you think that there was the public and political will to see these reforms passed?
Look, I actually don't understand what people in the parliament are worried about in the coalition, because there was a poll done by the Australian newspaper, and you can't say that they're in any way a lot of left wingers, which showed that well over 60% of people actually, when they did their poll, was done by Stephen Fitzpatrick from the Australian newspaper, when they did their poll, well over 60% of Australians polled supported having a voice. They supported this Uluru Statement. So, you know, I don't know where it's come from in terms of the coalition that if you put it to the vote, it wouldn't get up. So I don't know where that's come from, but they may have much more knowledge about this than I do. I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I'm a child health person, absolutely passionate about improving outcomes for kids.
Now,
and try to stop the costs and anguish of that. But I don't understand why they're frightened about not, you know, why are they not speaking to these groups? I don't understand it. I really don't.
And so by the tone of what you're describing to me, it does definitely sound like you believe it's a big step back in terms of effective policy making for First Nations Australians.
Yes. Give me some evidence that top-down policy has worked for Aboriginal people. You know, we've got these targets to close the gap. And if you don't involve Aboriginal people in those decisions, it won't work. They won't trust the services. They don't use the services. They understand the pathways which started with colonisation and with the stolen generation and with the marginalisation and removal from land. That we've got data to show in our surveys that there are third-generation effects.
Now, do you think enough has happened since Kevin Rudd's apology? Because I think a lot of Australians would have watched that and thought this was a watershed moment when it happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, what should have happened then, Miles, was that we should have then had a real commitment from that government to listen. In fact, many of the groups were lined up. So NACHO, the National Association for Community Controlled Health Organisations, we had the Aboriginal Legal Services, a lot of the Aboriginal services were lined up, ready to march for whatever reform was going to be required. So it's been a failure of successive governments on both sides of the political spectrum to actually appreciate these pathways that start with removals and marginalisation. I mean, for the Australian people out there who think that, you know, Aboriginal people just have to get on and, you know, get over it, if we had been through the kinds of pathways these guys have been through, we'd be in the same situation. Every colonised Aboriginal group in the world have similar outcomes. So it's not really an Aboriginal problem, if you like, although the racism is. It is a problem of what we've done and then not repaired. And I think that you have to understand these data. The data, basically, two things. The data showed that the stolen generation and marginalisation have gone through intergenerational impacts, and secondly, put Aboriginal people in charge, in partnership with us, in charge of their lives, and it will turn around. And there are many examples, both internationally and locally in Australia, which show that when you do that, people use the services and they improve their outcomes.
Professor Fiona Stanley, thank you very much for joining The Daily.
Thank you very much, Miles, for interviewing me.